Then it's the rest of you who talk funny, not us. Isn't it always a privilege to watch how God works in someone else's life? And watching Peggy grow in Christ has been such a joy. And she has such a wonderful desire to reach all people for Christ, but especially those who have been in bondage with Jehovah's Witnesses. Peggy Legg.
When I was 5 years old, one Monday, wash day, my mother was out in the yard hanging up clothes. And, thank you. A lady stopped by and started talking to my mother about some wonderful news. And turned out to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses. I was 5 years old at the time. My younger brother was laying on a pallet on the ground. And this lady was to come by many times in the next few years and bring her these wonderful magazines and bring her this new hope. And she was so filled with this new information that she was getting. Although there were times that I learned last year when I was here, by the way, this is my second year here, and it is such a wonderful privilege to be here. And it is such a blessing to find all of you and to be able to share and to listen to other people, their experience coming out. And it's a blessing beyond words. But let me get my old woman glasses on here. But we lived beside of a little Baptist church at the time. My mother had gone there for quite a few years. And I attended Sunday school there. And one of the main things in Sunday school that I remember was learning the Golden Rule. And learning the Golden Rule was to prove so important to me in the future, because our Sunday school teacher would have us up in the front of the class, and we would sit on the front two rows, the little children, and every year, every Sunday, we'd get a new sheet, and they would always have a picture on them. And the one that I most vividly remember was the one with Jesus Christ sitting on a rock with his staff beside him, and little children gathered around him. And those, what I learned in that Sunday school class, carried me through. My youngest brother was born in 1950 while we lived there in that house. Tommy was born with a handicap, which was to really affect the whole family in later years, and to affect actually from the beginning. He had a coordination problem. His mind and his brain, or his brain and his body, just did not work together. It was past a year old. He hadn't started to walk yet. My mother and I would work with him every evening. After the evening meal was over, we'd stand him up against the old-fashioned white kitchen cabinet, and we'd work with him, trying to get him to learn to stand on his own. Well, he was past 2 years old before he started to walk. And we moved to a house later that had stairs. Well, Tommy had trouble negotiating the stairs. He could walk up okay. Walking down was a big problem. To begin with, he started, he would sit down at the top of the stairs and he would scoot down the stairs. And I thought, you know, that was normal. He wasn't used to stairs, so he'd eventually get over that. But as time went on, I realized that he was not progressing like other children of his age. And later, when we had moved to this house, we started working with him on learning to come down the stairs. Every evening after I got home from school, I would work with him We would practice walking down the stairs and rotating his feet. And he had to, this was so hard for him to do. But I knew when he started school, and I'm 8 and 9 years old at the time, I knew that he would have a problem going down the steps at school, which proved to be quite a problem in later years. He was very inept at taking care of himself, and lo and behold, you couldn't teach him to do so. It was wrong to teach him to learn to defend himself. And I'll get into that in just a little bit. My mother was learning these new truths, although she was depressed much of the time. And I learned from last year, from being here, that a lot of times people's, the way they have been raised, they're set up, kind of set up to be vulnerable to people who, when cults come by, they give them the recognition that they want and or that they need, that they have never gotten. And she seemed so happy when this lady first started coming, and although she was depressed much of the time, she wrote a story about her life, tried to get it published. She called it A Prison Without Bars. She didn't want children. She had had to help raise her younger brothers and sisters, and she didn't want the responsibility of her own children. And she and my father had a lot of times had a lot of problems. And when my mother started studying with Jehovah's Witnesses, it didn't get any easier. The Little Baptist Church, by the way, there was one time my father, she had talked him into building her some shelves after she had begged and begged. And he finally decided he would do it, and he evidently mashed his finger and said something that he shouldn't have said. And she said, and I was 4 years old at the time, sitting out on the front porch in a rocker, and he had mashed his finger, and she said, "Luke, the next time I get married, I'm going to marry me a preacher." So hearing this, my mother, this is before the days of washers, automatic washers and dryers. My mother had had a clothesline out in the yard. You had the clothes prop. After you hung the clothes up, she was short like me. And she had to have a clothes prop to put under the clothesline to raise it up. Well, one day my brother and I, as we often did, loved playing with the clothes prop for some reason. We had it from underneath the clothesline. It was swinging down, and there was church that night. Well, there was no running water. Nobody had any running water. There was a pump in our yard. And the preacher would come over every evening before church and get water for the church, the old-fashioned aluminum water buckets. Well, this evening it was dark, and, of course, this was out in God's country. There was no street light. And the church from our house and from the church house, which was right next door. Well, this preacher this clothesline got him right around the neck. He hit the ground, and these water buckets are rolling around, and you hear all this scrambling, and oh, gosh, you know, this gathering these water buckets up, and it dawned, you know, I remembered what my mother had said, and I was sitting out on the front porch in a rocker, and I screamed at my mother, "Oh, Mom," I said, "Veronica, here, you've caught yourself a preacher." And that man never did come back over there for more water. He sent older sisters in the congregation, always, never did, and I didn't understand that at the time, but that's all right. But it was that little church that gave me the foundation for which carried me through the years that after my mother had become associated with Jehovah's Witnesses. And my mother complained quite a bit. She was depressed, and that affected everybody, of course, in the family. She would witness to different people as time as she had the time, as she got the chance. But we moved from there to another, we eventually ended up in a northern part of West Virginia, just in the southern part of West Virginia, where we went to the, where I went to the Little Baptist Church. And none of our neighbors in Cameron, up in the northern panhandle, knew of any witnesses in the area. Well, Mom prayed and prayed and prayed for Jehovah to send his witnesses, because we knew that we had to have his people to help us. We were lost without that. So one day, a lady knocked on the door, and it turned out to be the congregation seer's wife. But the congregation was 20 miles away, but which proved to be a problem for us getting there. But my mother, I hollered and told my mother that all the there's Jehovah's Witnesses. Jehovah's Witnesses have found us, Mom. And so she comes running from the kitchen to greet this lady. And this was the town where we were to stay. My father had followed construction before, but they had decided to stay in this town. And so he took a permanent job there. And to begin with, we didn't make it to the meetings very often. My father didn't want anything to do with this new religion. He didn't understand it. He was an old-fashioned Baptist, and not an active Baptist either. But his whole family were. I have an uncle who was a retired Baptist minister, and there was an older couple in Cameron that we eventually got to know. Sweetest people in the world. Sweetest people I can remember that remain to be Jehovah's Witnesses. And this lady had been a witness from the time she was 18. Within a couple of years, there was a brother who started coming to our home and conducting a Bible study. He was about 20 at the time. And he was conducting a Bible study with my younger brothers and my mother and myself. He had an older brother and his wife who would drop him off at our home. Then they would go on out in the country and hold another Bible study and would pick this brother up on the way back. The organization got to be really controlling in our lives. There was no time to be a kid. We had this Bible study, our personal Bible study, our family Bible study on Friday night. Saturday night we were out in service, and Saturday evening we went to the ministry school and service meeting. Eventually we were enrolled in the ministry school, learning to go from door to door. Sunday we were at the watchtower meeting. Wednesday we went to the book study, and I was told that getting through school was all I needed to do, that making good grades, I wasn't going to need anything that I learned in school. I would have given my right arm for the privilege of going to college, but no, that was out. There was no way. God's people, that you were materialistic if you wanted to go to college. That meant that you wanted to get a good job, and worrying about secular things was just not, that was proof that, well, that was proof that my heart was not in the right place. It was, pardon me, proof that my thinking was not just quite right with the organization and that I needed a lot of work. And so my mother began to encourage me to date this young man that was coming out holding this Bible study. He knew everything. Between he and my mother, there was nothing they did not know. And they were the all intelligent. I mean, you know, you just talk about anything. They knew everything. So I didn't care for this individual, but he would ask me out, and I would refuse. And so he would ask my mother, and my mother on numerous occasions told me to get ready, that I had a date, that I was going, whether I liked it or not. Well, I said, I'll go, but you can rest assured I don't like it. But I was told that I better not offend him in any way, that I better tell him lie, better tell him that I'd had a good time. And so as time goes on, it was during this period of time that the organization is telling people, if your children are in school, don't, you know, your children should not be saluting the flag. And it was odd. It was hard to stand there and listen to the flag being saluted. And as time went on, in my heart I started saluting that flag, but not outwardly to so, because there was another Jehovah's Witness girl in my class, and she would have reported me, I'm sure. But my mother became very more and more controlled by these people. They were doing her thinking. They were leading her totally. These people came to our home 98% of the time for lunch on Saturdays. We always went out in service every Saturday. Forget it. That was a done deal. We went out in service from about 9 till 12, and then we would return to our house for lunch. Well, my father worked 6 days a week, and he took his lunch hour from 12 to 1. And he would come in, look at the house. I mean, the kitchen was full, every chair was full, the table was full, and he would just turn around and walk out. And they kept telling me, "Oh, Luke, we'll make a place here for you. You know, there's plenty of room." Well, he knew they'd be trying to convert him, so he wasn't going to have that. He'd go downtown and eat. So my mother and I talked about talking to these people one time about talking to them about coming in at 1 o'clock, staying out in service till 1 o'clock, and then coming in. That way, my father could come home, eat, and he would be gone, and then we could relax. Well, I mentioned it to the brother. This was not the brother who was conducting the Bible study in our house, but the older brother and his wife. And so I mentioned it to them while we were on our way out to the our territory, and never said a word. Not one word was said. I explained it to them, and my mother said she didn't know why she hadn't thought of this before. She knew that they would, if they understood what a problem that this was making in our home, because my father objected to these people being in his house all the time. So I mentioned it to this brother, and he didn't say a word. She didn't say a word. So I thought, you know, this was accepted. 12 o'clock came. He turned that car around, and when this man was mad, he'd slam things around, you know. He'd floor that car, and I mean, he would drive like just really fast. I guess that was his way of expressing his anger. He didn't say anything, but in words. But he let me know that he was not going to take our request. I mean, this is our home, our food, but they're in control. They're in control of it. So when we got to the house, my mother looked like, I mean, I could see the stress on her face. And she thought that I had forgotten to talk to them. After they came and left, she said, well, and I told her that I'd talked to them. She said, well, you know, they're all we've got. I can't say anything to them again because they may get offended and they may not come back. And I was thinking, oh, God, yeah, please. And these people became more and more controlling. They started planning my life. They decided that I was marrying this younger brother. And they told me that they started telling me that I could not make intelligent decisions. My mother began to tell me that I had mental problems, and that everybody at the Kingdom Hall could see this, that everybody was concerned about my welfare and how I was going to make it into God's new world. How are you going to survive Armageddon if you don't follow what the organization is trying to do for you? These things were said to me in front of the congregation, around other people quite a few times, how stupid I was, how ignorant I was. And this, the older brother, even told me that I may not love his brother, but that if I would just go ahead and get married, that I would find out that everything would work out for the best anyway. That Armageddon was just around the, it was just a few years away, 2 or 3 years at the most, and that at least his brother was somebody that I could respect. Blew my mind. You know, how can you can't stand to be around somebody, but because of their demeanor. And, you know, I didn't realize at the time who was leading these people. You know, that's the way Satan divides and conquers. Now I know that it was not these people. It was not these people who were speaking. It was these people were being used. And my father at the time, during these years, he had joined a division of the Masons. He was going to the Blue Lodge. I think that's what it was called. It was some. It was a division of the Masons, and he had his secret Mason Bible hid in the house, and she discovered it. And oh boy, one day she discovered it and started reading it, and she thought it was hilarious. And so they were discussing something one day, and he didn't want to do it. And she said, "Well, we are going to do it." I forget now even what it was about. But she said, "Oh, so mote it be." Well, he knew then she had been reading his Mason Bible, because that's the way that some. And that's the one time, one of the few times that I remember my father really getting mad and having much to say. Normally, he was a man of few words, and she was a woman of plenty, believe me. But these people, my younger brother, during these years, I've seen him become very, very stressed. As a child, he had to be held back. The teacher learned that she had to hold him back when the rest of the class were dismissed, because he was so inept physically that he could not go down the steps. There was concrete steps when he was in the first grade. There was seven or eight steps that he had to come down. He could not come down those steps as fast as the rest of the children, and he would just get trampled at the bottom of these concrete steps. And he got beat up on a regular basis. He was beaten up, his money taken from him. There, he came home crying almost every evening. And At the time, I was trying to prove to my mother that, you know, I was trying to be a responsible person. I was getting myself up to go to school. And then I would get my brothers up, both of them, to go to school, two younger brothers. And the youngest one, the one that was being so badly abused, he would throw up. He would head to the bathroom first thing. This child was so stressed. Monday through Friday, you can depend on it. And they sent his child out. The brother who was conducting this Bible study was telling him to turn the other cheek. It'll be better in the new world, Tommy. It'll be better in the new world, and God will vindicate you for suffering. God will take care of it all. My dad is going to take care of it through the lodge member. This other child that was so abusive to him was a lodge member. Well, he's going to take care of it through the lodge. Well, you couldn't teach his child anything about defending himself. My father would say, "Well, son, just get away from him." Tommy couldn't run. How was he going to get away? If he tried to put one foot in front of the other very fast, he ended up on his face. And he ended up being shoved down into the mud, his books, clothes wet. The child left crying walked out the door, going to school, crying just about every morning. That is one of the, and today this brother is on my prayer list because he does not understand. He says he knows the Lord, but I'm really not, you know, and I hope he does, but he doesn't have that outward joy that people who really know the Lord have. And but this brother today is on my prayer list, and I do have another brother that is a Christian now, and my mother, through all of this, I would pray to the Lord to please help me get these people to understand that I was not stupid, that I could make intelligent decisions, and my mother would. There were times that there was two other girls that went to the Kingdom Hall that lived in Moundsville. That was about 20 miles away from us. And one of them and their mother would invite me. Her father had died, and they'd invite me over ever so often to spend a weekend or a week during the summer. And this other sister, this older brother's wife, eventually talked my mother into, if I went over there, that I had to date this brother, that I could not stay at my friend's house. And I also had to sit with him at the Kingdom Hall. I'd sit in the back for quite a few years. And then eventually she talked my mother into forcing me to sit up front. He always sat up front. So I'd take that book bag up there. Of course, it was always loaded. And I'd slam that book bag into that chair. I'd never sit beside him. The book bag rested there. That was the best use that book bag ever served me. And I'd slam that book bag in that chair till it would slam the chair. The whole chair would just slam up against him. What's your problem? God. Anyway, graduation came. My mother threatened me for years to make me quit school, to force me to quit school. And she knew I wanted that diploma. She knew but she always threatened me with that. Well, graduation came, and I remember running through the halls of my high school screaming, oh, God, I'm free. I'm free, I'm free, I'm free. And I know the teachers didn't, they thought, I'm sure, that it was from school, but I was going to take that diploma, and I was hitting the road. And for graduation, I had an older brother who had left home, and he bought me a three-piece set of luggage, so, buddy, I was ready. And one morning I'd gotten my diploma. It was a Sunday right after I had graduated, and my mother told me to get up front where I belonged. And I said, "Well, I said the day has come. I said I don't belong up front." And the meeting was just about ready to start. He was standing up front, getting ready to introduce the speaker, the brother that I was supposed to go up front with. And I said, well, the time has come. I said, I've got my diploma now. I said, you can take it and burn it if you want to. I can always write back to Cameron High School and prove that I graduated. And I said, but I'm out of here. I said, if I have to do this, and evidently I'm going to have to, I will write a letter of resignation, a disassociation from the organization. I said, I want that creep off my back. And the rest of you people, I said, you're nothing but hypocrites. And I turned to my mother and I said, you know, you're supposed to set a proper example for your children. And I said, what about your demeanor? What about you do you think that I would want to copy? And that was a hurtful thing to me to realize I learned more about Jesus Christ in the Baptist church as a child in Sunday school than I had ever learned in this organization. And the congregation the congregation. And my mother just, I thought my mother was going to pass out. I said, Mom, I said, do you realize how your two-edged sword tongue hurts people? Does that make any difference to you? And I said, you know, I'm out of here. I said, if you think in all the years that I've ever gone out in service, if I really seriously tried to get anybody in this religion, I said, you need to think again. I said, I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy, let alone my friends. And she finally got the idea. She started to back off because she knew, you know, she knew that there was no use to try to push me anymore, that I wasn't going to be pushed anymore. And but I had, she kept holding that diploma. Once I had that diploma, and there were still a few years that that I was associated with the organization. I married a brother who was the black sheep of the congregation. I don't know why, but I would have married him. But he was the first person that I had been able to hold a conversation, an intelligent conversation, with about anything other than the Bible. He actually thought. He could think on his own. He could act on his own. And lo and behold, there was one there. And so they had nothing good to say about him, of course. There were anything that they could find to bad to say about him. Oh, well, he didn't have a job. Well, hey, half the congregation didn't have a job, you know. Big deal, you know. And anyway, when they found out that we were engaged to be married, they said, well, you know, that we would kill one another. And anyway, he... as it turned out, the intelligent conversation that I thought I was having wasn't intelligent after all, about the Bible. I mean, you know. But anyway, he and I moved away to Ohio after we were married. And but these people tried to tell me, this is before I was married, that I had dues to pay. I had dues to pay that my family were going to have everlasting life because this brother's sacrifice. That I had dues to pay, and that I was a selfish person because I didn't want to pay my dues, and that Jehovah would remember this. But years later, one thing that my mother did was... They tried to. I'm gonna have to hurry up here, but they made me feel like that it was as if they had ordered themselves a body from Sears, and when they went to the catalog to order this body, they could, well, hey, here's Model A, comes with mind, a personality, and you know, it's already fully contained. It just needs to grow up and mature. They could order another one, and this was the way I described this association with this organization, after computers, of course. But Model B was complete blank mind, no personality. It was completely programmable. And when Sears filled the order, though, a letter of apology came with it that Model B was gone, that some wacko religious organization had depleted their supply of that model, and there was none of that model available. But if they tried, they probably could reprogram Model A, but at any event, it was not returnable. They were stuck with it. So, anyway, my husband and I moved to Ohio. We moved back to the organization. We moved back and were become pulled back into the organization in years for a few years. Then we moved from there back to down to Kentucky, where I currently live. My husband was also raised as a Jehovah's Witness. He went in the Army, which really broke his mother's heart. He became a conscientious objector because of his aunt writing him and telling him that his mother was mourning herself to death, and another guy, the other man got first. His name was David Street. David was the first sharpshooter in their company, and Ronnie, my husband, was the second. Ronnie, right, like 2 days after they had gotten the sharpshooter awards, my husband became a conscientious objector. And the first place man said, I was raised as a Christian. He said, let me in. He said, and my husband was in the brig in solitary confinement. But this man finally talked him into letting him in to talk to him. Oh, he said, I'll straighten him out in no time. Be no problem. 3 days later, the first sharpshooter was a conscientious objector. That's how well trained he was. And so they let them both out like that. Here's your honorable discharges. Go. My life has... My husband died in 95 of lung cancer, and I started seeking. My father had a whole house full of magazines, all kinds of publications from the organization, and I called the congregation overseer. He came and got those, and I said, you know, one thing I always wanted to do was investigate this organization, and I just bought a computer, and I'm going to do it online. And they probably knew about some of the things that I would find online. A friend of mine had invited me to church. I went, and I had started going to church, and one of the songs that was sang this morning, Holy, 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 first church service that I'm in, they're thinking about three gods, you know, God in the Trinity, and I thought, oh, my God, where am I? But as time went on, I eventually I just kept searching, and I finally one day I went to church, and I'd pray every day before every Sunday before I went to church. I'd pray, God, is this really what you want me to do? And there was an older lady that I worked with that was talking to me about this organization that I had been raised in. And she was telling me that that I could have. I only got 5 minutes left, so I want to speed this up. But it has been the most wonderful thing to realize that I can have a relationship with God, that I can talk to Him, and that I don't need to go through an organization. I prayed one morning before I left home. I said, Lord, I want something concrete. I want to help me. I'm grasping here. Help me to find what I need to find out about this organization that I was raised in. I went to church that morning, met a lady who was telling me about a Sunday school class that she attended, and she said, oh, she said, we'd really get down deep in the scriptures. And I said, oh, that's what I really need. And she said, well, you might not be interested in what we're doing right now. She said, right now, we're studying the cults. And I had just prayed within an hour, because I lived real close to this church. And I said, really? She said, oh, yeah. She said, we just finished up with Mormons this morning, and next Sunday we're starting on Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, she said, you might want to wait until... I said, really? She said, oh, yes. She said, we don't think we have any in the congregation. We really don't know a whole lot about them, but our study conductor, who was sitting right behind me, says he thinks he can get some information on them, and I'm just sitting. What information do you want? And she said, well, we understand they have a lot of false doctrines. Oh, really? And so she said, we really don't know, you know, Bobby says he can get some information. So anyway, I sit there stunned, and she said, "Oh, honey," she said, "I hope I didn't offend you." I said, "Well, I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness." And I said, "What do you want to know?" I said, "I can bring you all kinds of information." And so the next Sunday, I was in front of the congregation telling them what it was like to grow up as a Jehovah's Witness. As we were leaving the class, one of the ladies said, "Oh," she said, "I know a lady up in Lexington you need to meet." She said, and that was turned out to be Jean Eason. Next week, we're out there to meet Jean Eason. And she told me about this book that Jean had written. She was a third generation Jehovah's Witness. And this book has led a lot of people out of that organization. Jean studied herself out of the organization. This book, she tells about going back and reading the old publications, and if you didn't know that it was the organization's material, you would never recognize it because it's not current today. So the Lord is bringing, I'm now part of her ministry, and the Lord is bringing people to me now to help. And we're working with a couple right now. A man has been a Jehovah's Witness for about 6 years, and his family are doing quite well with the information that we've been taking. By the way, Jean's book also comes in Spanish, and that is a book. When this lady first told me about it, there was a bookstore that handled it, and I went up there, and they couldn't find it. The computer showed they had one, and I said, "You're going to have to find it. I'm not leaving till you find it. I don't care if it's 12 o'clock tonight. I want this book." So they finally got the lady. They had just redid the whole store and resectioned it, and this man looked for this book about 25 minutes, and he said, "Well, ma'am, I'm sorry. We've got one, but I don't know where it is." And finally, this lady came back from lunch, and she found the book. So it has been, I went up, and Jean was helping me to realize what had happened. My life has changed so much. I'm rebaptized. I was baptized as a Jehovah's Witness at the age of 16 because I was coerced into it. I was told that if I was not mature enough now, that I could start over in the Paradise Book as a baby, and that the rest of them, including my younger brothers, would go on to more mature information. So I was rebaptized, and life has been great ever since. And it has been a wonderful. What is so wonderful is knowing that I can have a relationship with my Creator, and that God is not a Xerox God. There's no copies. We're all individuals. We all can have a relationship with Him. We're all different. And the cookie-cutter religion that I was raised in is now I can use my experiences to help people come out of that organization because I understand the mindset. And the Lord is bringing me people. He's bringing me people. I work at a VA hospital. Are there any veterans in here? I work at a VA hospital. And when I was in high school and they were telling me that I couldn't salute the flag, I saluted that flag I kept listening to the words of that flag, and it said life, liberty, you know, about freedom. It was talking about freedom. And I said, you know, there's people who died to give this freedom to me, and there's other people trying to take it away. So I started saluting that flag in my mind and in my heart. And I started saying the Lord's Prayer. I couldn't do it outwardly. But today, I've gotten, of all places, for a former Jehovah's Witness to end up in a veteran hospital, where I've heard stories about the experiences of Normandy, the beaches of Normandy, and all of those experiences have just confirmed that I was in the wrong organization. And There was, last year when I was here, I wasn't aware of it. I had cancer. I had surgery the last December, and I'm doing great. I have a brother now who is a Christian, and I would call him and say, when I was going to church, and I attended a 13-week study in the Trinity. That's what really did it for me. It's not something that you can comprehend and understand all at one time.
That 13-week study is when I was through that. I'm rededicating my life. I know now where I'm going, and I know who's. I know the Lord, and my life has just turned in such a way that every day, and you would be surprised how many people I check into the clinic where I work that are Jehovah's Witnesses. And there, not too long ago, there was one who came. She was crying, and she said, "I'm having spiritual problems." Never expected her to be a Jehovah's Witness, but she was. So I'm getting a lot of experience working with people who are in the organization, and they don't even know. A lot of times I'm well with it. There's no way they would know. But I pray for a lot of people as they're leaving my counter. I pray for a lot of people I pray that they will find the truth. And I just know that the Lord has a plan for me. I'm not sure exactly how this will work out, but I know that eventually I'm going to end up in